This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 241, Smarty Pants. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on a wonderful, I think rainy, I know it's thundery, Friday afternoon with my friend and co-host Michael Martin on GamesAtWork.biz.
It's electric.
So now I'm going to have to go find that song.
It's one of those songs that I hate. I'm not a line dancing person. Nope.
It's electric.
But I am a driver. And do we have some fun things to talk about today? I think we do.
I think we do.
so let's jump right in, shall we? This is the first one's from you.
Yes.
And it deals with our friends in Germany doing some cool water, sunny moon, go to meet and bun 3D AR displays.
Yes. This is cool, and it's funny. I've actually heard about this one on a couple other podcasts this week, so I kind of feel bad that they got to them before us, but we record once a week. Some of them record daily. And listening to the various different ways that people pronounced Bosch was really funny.
Were some people calling him Bosch or something?
Yeah, Bosch was one of them. Bosch was another.
Bosch?
And I'm like, how do you get Bosch? There's no oosh.
Maybe they're just big beer fans or something.
I don't know. Head for the mountains. No, that's something else. Anyway, so Bosch is working on a new display technology for vehicles. And if you're not familiar with Bosch's role in the automotive industry, they are one of the big three tier one suppliers that provide technology in all the cars out on the road, right? And they have done some really, really cool stuff with display technology here with the idea of providing a better 3D capability for in-dash displays. So I was thinking about this, and you and I have been talking about head-up displays in cars for some time, which is a great way of getting 3D content. And I test drove a new car recently and was amazed by the solid pane of glass that was the dash. Unfortunately, in this car, the entire dash was in the center console.
Right. So you're staring at the wrong place.
Yeah. There was nothing in front of me. And so, you know, I'm so used to, I keep my eyes on the road. Right. That's why things like Siri and other voice assistants in cars are so good, because you don't have to worry about the radio, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But in this one, they actually split the giant screen in the center to where one third of it, the left hand one third, was driver focused, and the other two thirds plus were everybody else focused. Which was even worse.
That doesn't sound good.
No, because I'm nosy, and if I look over there to look at my speed or look at, you know, some other control, and I see this giant screen showing a movie, what's my brain going to do, right? Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So the cool thing that Bosch is doing is really to take that giant screen of glass and give it the ability to project out in 3D. So that you can then see driver appropriate stuff with a glance, more in focus, closer to the right hand side of your face. So it's not just what's dead in front of you. I mean, what's directly in front of you should be a head up display, but this is about projecting other screens into the eye, into the peripheral vision of the driver so they can glance and see it easily. I think that's a good idea.
Well, so to offer another thought on this is we should be at a point now where a head-up display could take advantage of the entire real estate of the windshield in front of you. So why do you need to have anything in the dashboard, so to speak, and instead just have up on the windshield in front of you, keeping your eyes on the road, the things that you need to see. You dim them out. You make sure they're not, you know, opaque, so that you are like, I can't see that truck because the clock is so big and in front of me and I can't see through it. You could put all the information that you need on the windshield.
Yeah, I agree.
And you know, the I've looked through the pictures from this article. It's interesting that it's like, oh, here's an alert. I need to alert you, like the road is about to turn, or here's an alert. You're about to, you know, while you're parking, bump into something.
Here's an alert. You're about to die if you take your eyes off the road. So let me put the alert down here.
Yeah, right. So how effective are those alerts really going to be, other than to distract you away from the road, which is part of the problem to begin with?
Exactly.
So my perspective is that cars could be enabled without having any of the usual dashboards that we have grown to know and love, and instead just having the information on the screen, and that you're able then to organize and optimize where you put what information on the screen so you can do what you need to do.
And if you think about it from a safety critical systems perspective, there would be certain things that you would not be able to optimize away, right? You know, you might say, well, I really don't need the, and I'll pick something kind of less relevant, but the odometer, right? But if that were deemed a safety critical feature, it would stay within the primary field of vision in the head-up display, if that were your only instrument cluster.
Right. Right. And then I would move entertainment stuff to potentially be closer to the passenger, as an example, right?
Yeah. So if the passenger wants to... Or if you're the only one sitting in the car, right?
Yep.
Then you would change the entertainment features to audio only.
Right. You just dim them away, because the only seatbelt and weight in the car is in the driver's seat. There you are.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and most modern... mid to high-end cars have inward-facing cameras anyway, so they know if you're sitting there. Don't even have to check the seat.
Correct. And reference, you know, last week's show about, you know, the cameras looking for attentiveness, you know, reference, da 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 da. I mean, we got lots of other examples on this. So one place, though, where I think AR could really be valuable was something that I know this is a rather old article. It came out last year, actually. But looking at this one reminded me of that one. And that is using AR as a way to help the user interact with their car and understand what they can do and how they can do it.
Yep.
Many user interface experiences are best experienced by just trying it, seeing what you can do. Now, that probably works really well on a laptop or a phone, but if you're driving somewhere, you might not want to be trying all these things out as you're driving. So a better way would be to have the manual on your vehicle be enabled via a mobile device, which could then use the camera to highlight for you what you could do. And then you could interact with your mobile device to be able to say, oh, well, look at that. If I wanted to change into, you know, snow mode, in which changes how my traction control operates, this is how I do it, and here's what I should expect.
So is that what the S means that as being in really my cool. transmission? Snow mode?
Maybe it does. I don't know.
I think it's if I W had your manual, for winter I and S for summer.
Yeah. Oh, is that how it goes? It's S for summer.
Not I thought it was W for woo!
Super fast.
Wee!
Yeah. Woo and wee.
I want to press wee mode. Yeah, well, no, this is interesting. And I really like the demonstration that they show about, you know, snapping into view, right? Where you're holding up the AR view and it goes, ah, I recognize the dash, right? So that's cool. It I did not realize. I think we had talked about this, but I had totally forgotten about this.
I don't remember if we did or not. We may have.
Yeah. Well, when I did my test drive last November, they didn't bring this up at all, and it was this car.
Are you kidding? Really?
Yeah.
That's weird.
They had two different models of the E-Class in the dash. One of them had half of the instrument panel was still traditional instrument panel, and right. half was all glass, or the mm-hmm. higher end was all glass all the way across.
Ah, okay.
And what was interesting to me is, yes, I love the tech, right? You know that. Anybody who listens to this sure. show knows that. But at the same time, if my car has an electrical problem, I want to see my instrument panel.
Yeah, you probably do. You probably do.
So.
But there are other ways to get that information.
Yeah, use your cell phone.
Yeah, while you're driving.
While
oh,
driving.
That's great.
Ah! Ah! And then you press W for Wii mode.
You know, before we leave the cars, there's one other thing I wanted to comment on. I just noticed this too. So on the Bosch article, one of the things that the article mentions is that the reason why they can do more of these things now is that the computers in the car are becoming more powerful and fewer versus many different kinds of chipsets yeah. floating around in the car. And I just wanted to comment on that for a moment, because when we talked about, oh gosh, you know, like attack vectors into vehicles mm-hmm. and how you could use things like the entertainment control modules. Yeah, exactly. Or radio or other things to be able to get into the car and now take advantage of controlling it, turning on the wiper blades or turning on the windshield wipers or playing the radio loud or whatever. It's interesting that the movement is more and more into a centralized computer to update over the air with new features and new capabilities. So that to me would also say that security's got to loom large, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And it was interesting. I was listening to another podcast talking about the Tesla and the very different mindset of how Teslas are being developed versus how quote-unquote traditional car manufacturers are building their electrical vehicles, right? Mm-hmm. And the mindset that Tesla could almost be considered a beta vehicle, right? It's an agile built vehicle because they right. do dynamic
perpetual
software
beta.
Updates, perpetual updates to the vehicle, et cetera. And that got me right. thinking along the same line of, if I have one large central computer or a few central computer components in the vehicle, I can get closer and closer to, you know, it's just a laptop or it's just a phone and it's used to having different software updates and all this change. Mm-hmm. But it also means that there's more interdependency between all the systems, unless you're going to, you know, set up your own Kubernetes clusters inside the car to keep things separate from a security perspective. And then you start thinking about it, you go, you know, you're absolutely right. The security process, both from a software update and an execution perspective, become much, much more critical, because when I had lots of different CPUs in the car, doing a coordinated attack across the entire vehicle meant I had to have a much higher level of sophistication and capability than, you know, let's say it's running Linux. Well, if I can yep. get in and exploit a Linux vulnerability, then I've got your car, right?
Yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah. So really, really interesting perspective and thing to think about as we get more and more to, you know, the term that I talked about years ago of the liquefaction of manufacturing, right? Where it becomes much more fluid and dynamic and changeable and mutable versus worrying about bending sheet metal and all the electrical mechanical aspects of building the car. Software, we've been talking about for 10 years, is becoming more and more the driving factor and the distinguishing factor between cars, and it's not the hardware anymore. So, yeah, fun
right.
stuff.
The design on the hardware is interesting, but it's the software updatability that now becomes even, you know, more potentially more powerful. So you're exactly right. So I'm glad we kind of went back to the future on that for yeah. just a moment.
I'm so glad we've had this time together. Sorry. Carol Burnett reference. Whoa, scary.
But we're not done yet. No. So I was up in the mountains, as some of our listeners know, a couple weeks ago, and climbing up and down the mountains. And funny enough, both you and I found the same topic here, that there are now the language on them is a lightweight exoskeleton shorts.
Yeah,
that were developed between researchers at the University of Nebraska and Omaha and Harvard to assist and help with both walking and running. And while it didn't seem like it was taking an enormous workload off the individual, 9.3% reduction in metabolic rate for walking and less than that when running, about half of that.
It was
interesting to see how smart clothing like this is now becoming more and more available and might be more and more helpful to augment humans to do what they need to do.
Yeah, it was interesting. I was reading, and I know we both came at the same story from different sources. And I know one of the sources had detailed video demonstrations of it. And I still don't get it, right? I conceptually understand the exoskeleton aspect, but the way they actually show the shorts, there doesn't appear to be enough physical mass to really help the thigh, right? Because what they have is they've got these little pats that in the one video, it looks like the pats are like patting the person on the butt as they're running. And then another ones that are on the top of their thigh. So it's just an ever so slight reinforcement of the motion from what I could tell. Mm-hmm. But conceptually,
that's
this is
thunder.
Really cool.
Wow.
Yeah, the thunder's really bad. And it's growing. But I thought it was interesting. It'd be interesting more so to see as this commercializes, because this is early research still. Any type of improvement, so, you know, a 9% improvement when walking and a 4% when running, does equate to, in more endurance activities, a significant ability to help people along. And the example that they were talking about in the one article was using this, like, in the military for a wounded soldier to be able to get out of harm's way, right?
Well, yes. And you think, too, about the level of the quantified self data that this could pull as a person is just moving around. You now can machine learn your way into stronger, better, more powerful ways to assist locomotion and personalize it. You know, I'm reminded of some of the security stuff that we've looked at before, where you can identify someone by how they walk, right? So video of how somebody walks
gait
is almost as unique
as
a fingerprint. Exactly. So imagine the ability to say, all right, we're going to start with 9%, but then this is going to machine learn and understand how you work and how, when you're fatigued, what you do next, and then where you go from there. So that's pretty cool, and we'll include all the links that we have on this as well. I was looking at the Science article on it too. So we're in the beginning of lots of interesting new human augmentation coming out, and not the least of which is this concept of an exosuit, which we're going to see more and more about anyway.
Yeah. Well, the good news is I've just been notified I'm in a severe thunderstorm area now.
Ooh.
Warning, not watch.
Okay. Well, if the recording stops or if you are doused with water, then we will know what will happen.
Yes.
I'm hearing it on my side now, too.
Yeah. It's interesting. The other article that you found on the smart clothing.
Oh, yeah.
I found this interesting from a materials perspective, right?
Yeah.
So basically, it turns a T-shirt, the way I interpret it, I know they say it differently, but the way I interpret it, into a high gain antenna booster, right? Even though they say what it really does is change the way the Wi-Fi signal is directed, right, from your devices.
Right.
But to me, it's just it's like what was it? You could put a Pringles can over a Wi-Fi antenna and do directional Wi-Fi, right?
Yeah, Cantenna was the name for that.
That
exactly.
Was it. Yes.
Yeah. So this they're calling it meta material. Is like
material
to me it looked like an
material.
Iron-on. Yeah, material about material. Well, no, meta material. So it's like this incredible extensive. It's an antenna. It's like an iron-on antenna.
Yeah.
It's sort of what I saw, and the two features that they were describing, and the first one I get, the second one I'm still trying to wrap my head around. The first one is maintaining a lower radius of electric signals to be very close to the body. So there's like all of these RFID shielding wallets and passport cases and blah, 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 so that you don't have your data emanating from around your body that can be picked up by people who want to just listen in. Right. So I can understand that. I don't understand necessarily how a clothing like this might work to prevent that, because it's usually not your body that's emanating those or emitting those signals. It's really coming from the devices that you wear, like a watch or a phone or something along those lines.
Yeah.
The second one, which I do get a little bit better, would be that there would be ways of pulling data and making it more easily accessible. They use the hospital gown as one example of this. You got to wear a hospital gown anyway. It might have these antennas built into the fabric itself, and that might make it easier and less intrusive. So that's a plus point for me, for folks in a hospital to have their body monitored by devices that are right there in the hospital room that they need to go do.
Yeah. So instead of having, the 20 different wire leads coming off of, out of a pocket,
you just wear a shirt.
On the gown. Yeah.
Yeah. You just wear a shirt, and that'd be pretty cool. And that'd be a whole lot closer to Star Trek. Plus. What the notion of gliding. So this idea about gliding signals, around, that was probably where I was not quite.
Yeah. That was my point too. It's like,
yeah.
Okay, to me, it's a signal booster versus
right.
The way the radio waves glide off of the clothing, it will be better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. Well, moving along, because we are nearly at time, and boy, we had two more things to touch. Why don't we go to the cloud for just a moment?
So I saw
that way
this article.
We won't lose our time. Yes.
I'll take credit for this one. So I was flipping through my feed earlier this week, and there's an article in ZDNet about people suing Apple for not disclosing that iCloud might rely on third-party cloud services. And the basic premise behind the suit is Apple is considered the privacy-focused cloud provider. And as such, they can demand, or customers will pay, a premium for their cloud storage process, right, or products. So whether that's iCloud for your photo storage or your music, or using iCloud with your Mac and your iPhone to share data and documents, etc. And if you look at the iOS security guide, which I've read a couple years ago, Apple indicates that in certain circumstances, they use third-party storage service providers. And that could be AWS or Google Cloud. And so these individuals are trying to stand up a class action against Apple for everybody who's ever used iCloud to say, hey, you lied to us because your basic iCloud agreement says iCloud is enabled with your content automatically sent to and stored by Apple. Those are the words.
Right.
So I started thinking about this, and if I just look at, you know, our website that we run for gamesatwork.biz, we're using a third-party hoster that mm-hmm. hosts a virtual machine in which we run our software that manages our website. Now, right. that software is an open source project. It's a WordPress site. And WordPress will have native APIs that they wrote, and you can add in third-party APIs in order to expose your site. So we use APIs for things like posting our podcast. And my thought process was, I guess the average person just doesn't think about the fact that when you buy a piece of software, you're not necessarily buying something written from ground to GUI all by the same vendor. They use third-party libraries for compression or for UI elements, etc. And then you extend that to a web service, you have the same thing. You might have more than one party's APIs being pulled together to expose a new web service. You go to Amazon, I guarantee you that Amazon is not, as a shopping site, running from top to bottom only Amazon technology. And so I was looking at this and saying, you know, we're not a legal show, I'm not a lawyer, you're not a lawyer, we don't even play lawyers on TV. But people's yeah. inability to fundamentally understand how technology is created just blew me away. And so I wanted to get your reaction to this case.
I find it interesting too, and to me it feels like this is really more of a story around subcontracting, right? So if the data is stored by a group, you know, I'm thinking about the language around GDPR. And again, like you said, not an attorney. This is not kind of what I do on a day-to-day basis, but it's turtles all the way down. I'm storing something. I'm relying on a service provider that's doing something on my behalf, which in turn might be relying on another service provider, which might be relying on another one. And there are interrelated agreements all the way up and down the chain, which may not be all exposed to the consumer who's buying the bundled service as a whole. So that is kind of where I was, what struck me. Flip side is if I was storing information, I would have expected that the iCloud materials that I'm storing, pictures, whatever, are, you know, in the data center right here in North Carolina, or, you know, one of the other Apple data centers too, and that's where it's stored. So interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's a similar circumstance in other areas of the world too. So thinking about GDPR, I wonder what the story is around Europe, or if that is a similar situation.
Well, in Europe, again, you have, and like you, I'm not an expert on GDPR, but I do know there are data processors that have to adhere to the process. And is the other one's data owners? It was processors, and I want to say owners, but I'm not sure that's the correct term. But the thing is, there are responsible parties, and then there are people who are responsible to adhere to the responsibility of the responsible party. Right? So if kind you are sort of, a mm-hmm. subcontractor working for the party responsible, you are still required to adhere to those policies. So just because, if we take it back to this example, just because I'm using Google as a back-end storage provider, if Apple is saying, I have this service and I have defined the process and data handling and security and privacy elements of the service, my expectation would be that they enforce those rules to their subcontractors. Right?
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, I just found it an interesting article, and it kind of resurfaced what I believe is a misunderstanding or a lack of understanding of how technology works by people. And it shocked me as soon as I saw it. I was like, really? Now, if they can show that that's not being adhered to, right, that there's a, you know, a data breach that's causing because it's on AWS or on Google or some other third-party provider, and they are not adhering to the rules, well, then Apple should be suing the crap out of them, right?
There you are. Yes.
Cool.
Yes, yes, yes. All right, well, look, we're a little over time. The last thing I want to just throw in there, because I thought you would have liked this too, was this this example of a photographer who made a replica of one of the cameras, a video camera that NASA took to the moon, and kind of the care and energy and time that was taken to go do that.
Yeah, the Hasselblad.
It's pretty amazing. Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
So I thought
really
you would
good article.
Like that.
I enjoyed it.
Awesome. Well, team, that's where we're going to leave it for today, because we are out of time. But we hope you're enjoying it, and we hope that you send us more of your links and thoughts and ideas on Games That Worked Up It.
Bye.
See ya.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.